Five friends travel to a cabin in the woods where they unknowingly release flesh-possessing demons. Tonight, we revisit the original namesake for this podcast on the Summer of Sam Raimi. Tonight, we're talking about the Evil Dead. Summer of Sam Raimi continues on. We truck forth after the... Oh my god, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's Murder and Within the Woods. We truck on to the second time talking about the Evil Dead since the first time was lost into the ether.
The Evil Dead, but again.
The Evil Dead again. Always again. Yeah, I'm excited. This is... It's going to be repeating for us, but that's okay because it's going to be the first time for the audience. Also, yeah. I did the thing that I said in the Lost recording that I said I wish I had done. Mm. And I actually went back and found the info from If Chins Could Kill and other random interviews. So I have a lot more information production about the movie now. I said for people listening, in the original recording that is lost that you'll never hear, that, man, I really should have just, like, opened that book up again or, like, looked up some stuff. I did this time. So I have all that info.
Nice.
Yeah. So we can pepper that in. But, again, I will start this off the same way as before and say this is one of those integral moment movies of my childhood. This was the first time that me and my friends... watched a movie and were like, hey, that's kind of fun. We could probably do that and like tried different shots and stuff that they did here. We made so much fake blood. Oh my God. Buckets and buckets of fake blood that ended up just like getting mold on them from like sitting and being gross. So we tossed them after that. God. A few weeks later, it was absolutely fucking disgusting. The Evil Dead is one of those movies that is super important to who I am as a person, especially in like the horror realm. So it is a treat to go back and revisit that sort of thing. That's kind of where I'm coming at this from. And I hadn't seen it for years until we were doing this. Mm. But I know that you have. You've watched it somewhat more recently.
Yeah, I watched the... It was years ago at this point, but... a few years ago. But also, my relationship with this movie is a little weird because I kind of was exposed to these three main Evil Dead movies in backwards order. Seeing Army of Darkness on TV once and not really knowing what it was. And then when my friends showed me these movies in college, I came in on Evil Dead 2. Like they had watched Evil Dead earlier without me. And then watched Army of Darkness and was like, oh fuck, I kind of fucking remember this with like a memory. And then I watched the Evil Dead afterwards, kind of knowing what it was exactly. So I have a different relationship to this movie and like there are just the effects at the end that are not like anything in the other movies are kind of the thing that stands out to me about it.
Sure. You also came to it kind of at an interesting way of maybe expecting like the more funny slapstick stuff right away. Like, was it shocking that
no,
this one, even though it has kind of a sillier tone just than some horror movies, it's pretty serious.
I was pretty aware that it was way more of a horror movie than a horror comedy.
Sure. Okay. That helps.
So I knew to expect that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Out of the three of them, kind of where does this stand for you? Like before we rewatched 2 and Army of Darkness, like what what number is this in the hierarchy for you? From what you think, like what remember back to?
Definitely, I like Evil Dead 2. I just think it's a better movie because he. But there is, I do like the hard horror-ness of this compared to Army of Darkness. Just gets a little too silly.
Yeah,
a little Army too Darkness lighthearted.
Silly.
It's sure. it strays a little forward towards just action comedy or whatever, medieval fantasy comedy. And I like the hard horror of this. Like the moments of this movie that fucking hit.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's that. But I like Evil Dead 2 and I like the remake more than I like this original movie personally.
Okay. Sure. I don't necessarily disagree. Going into this with everything kind of in the rearview mirror and remembering back on them, mm-hmm. I think I rated this higher than I will by the end of this. I still rate it really high now because I need to revisit 2
mm-hmm.
and Army of Darkness and then the remake. But like this has always been my favorite in memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to change this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think the reality of seeing, like rewatching this, it definitely has a nostalgia hit for me that maybe it didn't for you. So there's that amount of like love for it, mm-hmm. but also that only goes so far. And like, I remember some of the other things the other movies do that I enjoyed more and think work better for like, I guess these are the seeds that were planted that will like sprout into the thing I like a lot more later on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much credit I can still give them for being the seeds, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Like it's super important to me as a human.
Yeah.
But revisiting it now again, it's the cracks are more, it's like going to like your childhood home and just like looking around and being like, these rooms are small. Than I remember.
Uh-huh.
Or like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that sort of thing.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't. It works both ways because there is a charm to like being able to tell that these were people like shooting a movie because of the low budgetness of it. But also like you can really tell sometimes it's just like people in the woods with a camera.
Totally.
The parts where it like elevates above that kind of become all the more impressive because of that, though. So
totally. Yeah.
It doesn't.
When I tell you how some of these things happened.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yes, you're right. It is low budget. So this was funded for $375,000, as we all know. I looked up kind of more information about how they got that. So within the woods, the way that helped them get money is literally them airing it in theaters that would allow them to, and them saving up the dollar, the like $1 or $2 profit they would do from that, up to about $85,000 worth.
Nice.
So literal hundreds of screenings.
Uh-huh.
And just like saving up all the money from that. And that, as we know, $85,000 is not $375,000, which is what it ended up.
Mm-hmm.
But they foolishly maybe were like, oh, this is a good start. Let's start doing it.
Oh, no.
So the story is that about halfway through, they ran out completely of money. They completely ran out of money, went to investors and begged them for money, putting up their own houses as collateral, including Bruce Campbell put up his house as collateral for it, which is why he's credited as an executive producer.
Uh-huh.
That's why he has that credit, because he put up his house. He believed in his friends so much that he put up his house. That's so stupid.
Yeah, that's pretty irresponsible.
Yeah. Just like dumb kids doing dumb kid things. I thought it was kind of interesting, though. I wanted to like grab the whole story about that stuff. And like out of that, apparently the actors, they paid $100 a week for shooting. Mm-hmm. Production and production assistants made $50 a week. Rob, the main producer, Sam, and Bruce themselves set aside $35 a week for themselves to collect, but they never collected them. They just couldn't afford to take money from it. So those three specifically just didn't pay themselves for it. Which is kind of funny, I guess. There was a story where Bruce was saying that during shooting, he went to like the store and wanted to buy some gum and then realized he can't afford it. He literally had $0.
Oh, man. Man. Yeah.
Super irresponsible, which is, it's one of those things that remembering back to it, I'm sure they're like, man, this is what you got to do, though. You got to like put your balls on the line or whatever. Mm. There's a billion more other stories you never hear about where people did that and they're in a gutter now.
Yeah.
Like for every one Sam Raimi, there is, I mean, I guess I wouldn't even know their name because they probably drank themselves to death because of the loan sharks coming after them. So
yeah,
maybe don't do that. There's a point where having a dream is nice, but like it should be somewhat realistic, I think.
Yeah, don't. Anyways, don't put your home up as collateral
for your movie. Yeah.
Yeesh.
Anyways, part of what also made some of these shots interesting is that they had to work with the idea that they didn't have money. Mm-hmm. So the movie starts off with us getting a view from the demon side of things, a first person, a point of view. That's what I'm looking for, of the demon going through the woods. This was apparently taken by literally Sam holding a camera for when they go over the lake. Mm-hmm. Sam's holding a camera in a little dinghy with Bruce Campbell pushing him through the water.
Hell yeah.
To get that shot. They set up, I can't remember what they called it now. I should have written it down. They set up a rig, which is basically just a way to like set the camera up on a 2x4. And they would grab each side, either side of the 2x4 and run through the woods to get those shots.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah. So when you're watching the opening scene, just think about two goofball 20-year-olds running with a piece of wood with the camera set on top of it through the woods. Because that's how they got it.
Pure evil.
The evil dead lives. And yeah, so it's kind of a cool opening though. I don't think that there's been many times before this movie where we really get the first person view of the enemy happening. That seems like it probably was a pretty rare thing. I'm trying to think of any films that came out before that did something like that. I'm sure there were like B movies that did, for the exact same reasons, but I just can't think of any right now. It's kind of been one of Raimi's, I would say, signature moves that he pulls a bunch of times, too, in the future.
There's Psycho, I think.
Yeah. Actually, that might legitimately be the first time.
Yeah.
Psycho.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's cool. We get a shot of the group of kids that we're going to be following through this in the car heading to a cabin in the woods for some time away from it all. A nice vacation. This car, I didn't say it before, but I think it's worth mentioning, is Sam Raimi's car from back then. But this car is also a car that is in all of his productions ever since, in some way, makes a cameo. So it is a 1973 Oldsmobile Delta 88. And obviously in this, in all the Evil Dead stuff, is Ash's car.
Yeah.
In Spider-Man, it is Ben Parker's car. It's some character that I don't remember the name of. aunt something or other and drag me to hell. And like, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Just basically anytime we watch these now, I'm going to try to remember and see if I can spot the car.
Nice.
But this is kind of the start of like that car has been a cameo in all of the stuff he's done. So it's just funny.
I think I heard in a Bruce Campbell interview, I think it was like an AMA, that Remy has like four of those cars at this point, but they always use the original.
Like, I don't get it. Like, what is it about? I don't know. I guess this is one of those things that he loved it or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyways, yes, a 1973 Oldsmobile Delta 88 for any car guys out there, if you want to look it up. There you go. And another thing we didn't mention the first time, actually, they pass by two weird hitchhikers that wave at them on the way out in the middle of nowhere that are like drinking beers or something.
It's got to get so mad.
That's Rob Tappert and Sam Raimi.
Gotcha.
As the hitchhikers. And it's funny because later on, the tape that they listen to that has a bunch of gibberish Latin or whatever, one of the parts says Samen Sarab Da Is Hekar Dande Rosa or something, which is Sam and Rob are hitchhikers on the road.
Gotcha.
Just a little Easter egg. Which I found funny. So that was funny.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So they go to the cabin across a bridge that a giant sign says dangerous bridge. Bridge is dangerous or something.
All human sense, do not cross this bridge.
Yeah. And as they're crossing it, it literally falls apart. There's that great scene of the tire just like breaking through one of the cracked floorboards or something and the car getting stuck. I especially like, though, with Bruce Campbell, Ash's character, opening the door to like look down and see what's wrong and making this goofy like, whoa, face. It's just a good time. And that shot lasts way longer than it should.
I have to go back bridge. And now there's a hole in it.
There's a hole in it. Also, we saw metal girders like fall down into the water.
Yep.
While they go over. Yeah, it's just a bad time. And they come up onto their new abode for, I guess, the weekend is the idea, or at least the night. They come up to the cabin, which everything takes place where everything takes place. So I have information about this cabin. You want to know some information?
I would love cabin info. Cabin facts.
All right. So this cabin was leased with the promise to the original owner that it would be given back in the same condition it was leased out to them. And it was for the most part, except they built the fireplace. It didn't originally own or have a fireplace, but they needed it for kind of like everything, basically, the finale.
Yeah.
So that was built in there. Apparently there was horse shit and stuff everywhere. It had to be completely cleaned, and they had to do a lot of work just like making sure the electricity worked and stuff like that, which it did. However, it had no running water. So the crew all like used it as they were shooting as a place to sleep as well while they were shooting. 13 people in that small space, a bunch of them sleeping on the floors or wherever they could fit. In the middle of a Tennessee winter with no water, so no showers or anything.
Oh, man. And
apparently it was just absolute hell, they say. A lot of them apparently got, like, really sick from just being in the cold. And by the end of production, they had resorted to burning furniture and props that they weren't using anymore to keep warm, which is hilarious.
Kevin really was evil.
Yeah.
They lived the real horror movie.
And another thing about the fireplace that they created, at the end of production, they put a time capsule commemorating the production and their time spent there and buried it within the fireplace. That cabin, ever since, has been vandalized and burned down, so it no longer exists. However, apparently, all that does exist, or that is left, is the fireplace, which is kind of interesting.
That's funny.
Yeah. Like I said, super, super
brick weird. Or whatever.
Yeah. Real shithole, apparently. Like, just absolute shithole. But
I mean, it looked like a shithole. So that checks out.
Yeah.
God, those fucking windows are fucking giant, too. Miserable time. Yes, that must have been.
Yeah. I didn't, like, keep this note, but just as, like, a thing I was reading, too. Apparently, they shot in Tennessee for a few reasons. One being that Tennessee seemed more interested in them just in general filming anything down there than Michigan. And Michigan is kind of known for being a pretty cold place during the winter, right? This was shot, I think, in December or something like that. Some of the scenes I remember reading were shot like New Year's Eve, specifically the one where they cut up what's her face. They dismember her. Was New Year's Eve they shot that. So around that time of the year. And Michigan's usually pretty brutally cold, and Tennessee not so much. This was like apparently one of those freak years that Tennessee had one of the worst cold fronts they've ever had around that time, and Michigan had a really like normal, like mild winter, which is hilarious.
Great.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, apparently everything that could go wrong just, like, went wrong and made things harder for production.
Yeah.
I love those types of stories. That's kind of why I wanted to grab them in the first place. Obviously, I won't be doing this for, like, every single one of them. Because the stories, I think, get less interesting in general as you go along and have money to do things.
Sure.
but I really, really like that this was like a scrappy group of like teens essentially making a thing, and it turned out to be one of the biggest, most influential horror films of all time.
Yeah.
It's just super cool. So they get to the cabin and start doing what teens, I guess, do at cabins. Start like breaking out the beers, walking around, like talking,
playing tapes you find in the basement.
Yeah, so they're looking around and they find a cellar. They go into the cellar. Fun fact, that cellar doesn't exist. That cabin does not have a cellar.
That makes
so
sense.
So what they actually did there is they dug a hole to get the shot of people like coming up and out or going in. They dug a hole and put a ladder in. And then the shots of the actual cellar were filmed in a farmhouse that was owned by Rob Tappert's family, while the final room where they find the tape and the shotgun with the poster of The Hills Have Eyes on the wall is actually Sam Raimi's garage.
That makes sense.
Fun fact. Yeah, because that cabin does not have the infrastructure, first of all, for something like that. And that cellar is way bigger than makes sense.
There were water pipes in that cellar.
There's water pipes in that cellar, and there is not water in that cabin. Yeah. So, yeah, they find a tape in the basement with a shotgun, and they bring it up and start listening to it. It says some ritual incantation that they kind of play off as whatever. And then weird shit starts happening.
Yeah,
apparently that scene, they got high to shoot and then had to reshoot because it was an absolute mess.
Oh my God. That checks out for sure. They also find the dagger, with the little skull
right
on it in the
base.
Around then.
And the Book of the Dead.
Yep.
A book bound in human flesh and written in human blood, which was also the original name for this movie before. I can't remember his name. I think it's Ivan Shapiro or whatever, whoever the like dude who helped them actually produce it and get into things said yeah, that name sounds boring and the kids won't like anything with book in the title because they make it seem like it's about literature or whatever. So, he made Sam Raimi come up with a list of names and then said the Evil Dead is the least bad one. So they went with it. Yeah, that's a great story too.
Beautiful.
I definitely would have been less intrigued about this movie if it was called Book of the Dead. 100%.
It would. Yeah.
It's too on the nose. Also.
More generic?
Yes. Even though, super generic. Yeah.
Evil Dead is classic. So, because yeah. These movies are good.
some people might say they're some of the best movies ever made. I don't know who that would be, but none of us would.
I would.
Yeah, I think they're some of the best movies ever made. Yeah. If you know what you're getting into. Anyway.
Yeah.
If you know what you're getting into.
When Bruce is flipping through the Book of the Dead. Because it looks way less like a fucked up book. And just like, he's like, oh, neat. Look at these drawings.
Oh, fuck. Wait, there's actually a famous art piece in there. I forgot to write down the name of it. There's a famous art piece that they just straight up use and put in the book. And I kind of want to find it now. It's like one of these weird ass long names too from some old artist. Mm-hmm. Something devil, something sun, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. This is something I should have looked up, but I wanted to say it the first time too, but it completely passed my mind. I just found it funny that they straight up took like a famous painting or something and put it in there because it was kind of devil-y looking.
Just fucking Kronos was just in the Book of the Dead.
Yeah, so they read they don't read the book. The tape says an incantation. We get some weird shots outside of like hay bales and the grass or something, the like overgrown grass starting to like glow and shiver or something, indicating the evil is not dead, maybe, and very much here and being activated or something. And things just kind of slowly get worse and worse from there for the crew, starting with, I'm trying to remember who, Cheryl, the sister.
Yeah.
Cheryl hears something or has some feeling that she needs to go outside and see what's going on.
And she
gets attacked by trees.
And she freaks out just from hearing the tape, too.
Yeah, she has that whole, like, shut it off, shut it off, shut it off, or whatever. Uh-huh. Just, like, just way overboard.
And Scott is a dick about it.
Yeah, Scott is just the biggest dick. Oh, yeah. This group also, reminiscent of the group in Within the Woods, it's kind of the same dynamic. It has Bruce Campbell, and a character named Cheryl, a character named Scott, and Linda. They're all played by different people, but they kept the names for the most part, except I believe Shelley is new. No, Shelley was one of them. Cheryl is new. Cheryl's the sister. Cheryl's Ash's sister. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. Also, there's so many like callbacks, I guess, to, apparently these are all people they knew and other short films that they did before, even the ones we watched. So I guess that makes sense. Cheryl specifically is somebody that apparently worked with them. Maybe the woman that was in It's Murder, I think her name is Cheryl something. Scott is, oh my God, I can't remember his name either. he's Scott from Within the Woods.
Yeah.
Because that was his name in that too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just like a few little callbacks. I thought this is nice and cool if you're in the know, which I now am from reading a bunch of things.
Hell yeah.
Again. And now you are a listener for listening. So
join us. Join us.
Yeah. Join us. Yeah. We get the scene that ever since even Sam Raimi's like, I really regret how this happened.
Yeah.
But Cheryl goes out into the woods and we get what is maybe not so lovingly known by everybody as the tree rape scene, where
that's what a bunch happens.
Of branches, trees, and brush all attack Cheryl in maybe a more suggestive way than was intended. So what he's utilizing here is something called like reverse filming or something like that, mm-hmm. where they wrapped her leg up, right, with the branch,
yeah.
and then recorded them pulling it and then rolled it backwards so it looks like it's going up her skirt. So
yeah.
there's like a few moments like that, but then it kind of all is like thrown away when that whole scene ends with like a giant tree dick essentially shooting in a specific spot.
Yeah.
So I don't know. maybe it's a little more on the nose than they want to admit, but
yeah,
they all regret that scene exists. They all do. None of them are stoked about it. And
I can imagine.
That's like really refreshing to know as a viewer. Because how would you feel if I came to this here and we're talking about it and you're like, man, I really thought that like tree scene though, I like it's kind of a blemish on an otherwise pretty good thing. And I was like, oh yeah, no, they're stoked about it. That's like their favorite part. It kind of like paints a different picture about who those people would be.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that they don't like it. But I also can put up with the fact that it's only there for, I don't know, like about 5 minutes total time,
yeah.
which is 5 minutes probably too long. But I legitimately thought, I remember in my brain it lasted way longer.
Sure.
So I'm glad I was wrong.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the part of the movie that's fucked up and not fun.
Yeah.
You just feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, in just a real bad way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind feeling uncomfortable, but it's bad. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. She gets away, runs in, screaming, wakes everybody up, and they have this whole conversation about how they need to get her. She wants to leave. She's not going to stay here another night because the woods attacked her. And, we get this awesome, at least I think it's awesome, I think it's hilarious, moment of she's making her brother Ash take her back into the town.
Yeah.
So she could stay at a hotel or get help or whatever.
They're such dicks about it because they go from like asking what happened and she says the woods attacked her, but and then they go to that's fucking it. The woods couldn't attack you. That's impossible. And then that turns into like them not believing anything happened. Even though she was clearly attacked by something. But like,
yeah, they're just like super gaslighting her.
Yes.
So, nope, the woods couldn't have attacked you, so nothing happened.
Uh-huh. You're technically wrong about probably what happened to you. So that means your opinion, your thoughts are invalid. Calm down.
Totally. Yeah. But Ash being the brother, yeah. obviously, he has to take care of this. He has to do it. He's not stoked about it either. I love that they get in the car and he's trying to start it. And there's kind of this like ominous, like, oh shit, the car's not starting. They're not going to get out of here. And she even says like, it's not going to let us leave and like starting to freak out about it. And then the car starts. I just think that's such good, like it's unintentional comedy.
Very funny.
Yeah, that's a good moment, especially how Ash just looks at her like all pissed off. Like, see, things are fine. Let's go.
Things are not fine.
Because the bridge is a little worse in shape than before. It is now a claw that looks like it's trying to grasp at the cliff edge.
Uh-huh.
And there is so much smoke.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It is the foggiest night of all time.
I do find it funny that Ash gets out of the car so far before getting to the bridge. I assume because they couldn't get their car near whatever like fake fucked up bridge they built.
Yeah. Apparently there's a shot there too where they filmed it on an angle.
Yeah.
Like he was walking on even ground. So there's like this weird shot of him looking like he's moving all erratically for no reason.
Uh-huh.
And that's intentional. But yes, it is something apparently like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they head back. And I mean, it just gets worse and worse. There's no real delicate way to put this, but one of the other girls just completely goes insane, tries to kill them, and ends up being cut into pieces because of it.
Yeah. Well, first Cheryl gets possessed and they lock her in the basement.
They lock. Yeah. They
and fucking Scott fucking drop kicks her or whatever.
And then uses the axe handle to beat her in.
Yeah. And like,
yeah.
And she's clearly like goes through like several different like makeup changes as like different people are playing the character for different shots or whatever. With different wigs. That stuff's fun.
The shemping. Ted Raimi, I did read, basically played like all the side stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When actors weren't around or they needed to do an extra shot, that's probably Ted Raimi doing a thing in a wig or something. Which, yeah, sure, makes sense.
Gotta have someone game to just fucking be behind a mask.
Yeah, no, totally. I can't remember the next one's name. I think it's Shelley. I think Shelley's next. Where is it? Yeah, Shelley's next because Linda's last, I believe.
Yeah, Linda.
The women.
Well, Linda just gets the fucking pencil in her ankle.
Yeah, Linda gets stabbed with a pencil and then decides it's bedtime afterwards.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to sleep in a moment like that for some reason.
Yeah, I think Cheryl fucks her up and then she's asleep. Well, when Shelley goes
Shelley
crazy.
Changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or gets possessed.
Yep. Yep. So Shelley, we get this cool scene of Shelley's in her bedroom or whatever. And the demon or the entity or whatever is crashes through the window. And that's kind of where she gets possessed. Apparently that was filmed by putting a piece of rebar or something on the camera and then just literally breaking the window with the camera.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to tell you about how the end shot happened.
Oh man.
Holy shit.
Just fucking strap the camera to a battering ram. Let's fucking go.
Yep. So the demon crashes in and she is possessed and turned or whatever. She attacks everybody, I guess, but specifically Scott, and he throws her into the fire, which is hilarious. She just like starts burning or whatever. And he stabs her with the dagger that they found, mm-hmm. the Kandarian dagger or whatever. And we get this first instance of this weird, like, milky goo substance or something instead of blood coming out.
Yeah.
The reason for this, apparently, this is, first of all, 2% milk, in case you were wondering which version of milk it is. It is 2%. And part of it was used because Raimi wanted to distinguish that, like, the Deadites aren't really human.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of, like, a new thing. But also, maybe more importantly, to make sure that it didn't get an X rating from too much blood. It was to cut down on the gore.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's, I thought that was funny.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we think she's dead, but she isn't or whatever. So Scott decides he needs to cut her up with an axe.
Yeah, because on the recording they listened to, the guy talked about how you have to, to remove the demon from a body, you have to sever the limbs and stuff.
Yes, exactly.
And so
he does that.
Scott goes to town, fucking dismembering his girlfriend. It doesn't really take him that long to get there.
Yeah, I know. I think it's also important to say that Scott is the only one that seems at all ready to deal with the situation. Even though Ash becomes the hero that we know him to be eventually, in this, he is thrown into shelves consistently and is usually on his ass.
Yeah, there's like just a part. He's just like standing there, like holding the axe or something, but like too scared to move or whatever.
And then he gives it to him, or it gets taken from him or something. I can't remember specifically anymore, but
I think Scott just takes it from him.
Ash is completely useless in this for a long time. Yeah. And it's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny looking back compared to what Ash becomes, seeing him here.
Totally. Just so useless in this. I love it,
man.
So he dismembers her and they go to bury her. And this is kind of when Scott freaks out. Says that he needs to find, they got to find a way back, and kind of runs off to do that.
He's like, I'm fucking gone. And Ash is like, but Linda, and he's like, fuck if I care. And he just leaves.
Yeah. And then comes back dying.
Yeah.
Cause the trees wouldn't let him leave.
Uh-huh.
I find that really funny. Like, a lot of the stuff in this that's funny is unintentionally funny, but like obviously was played up in a way that is comedic because it's Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
Obviously. And so he's dying on the couch, and shocker, Linda has succumbed. She is possessed. There's that moment, I think we talked about last time too, where she's like in the doorway pretending to be normal or something, or like singing a song or humming a song or something like that.
Yeah.
And then she's turned and attacks Ash, and she ends up stabbing her, I think. Or does she stab him? I can't remember. I think he gets like shanked here, right? Something happens to him. Maybe it's his leg. Doesn't his leg get completely torn up?
His leg does get torn up at some point. I can't remember.
It might not be here,
order
though.
Order of operations. The thing we didn't mention was when Shelly tears her own fucking hand off.
Yeah, because she had the dagger in it when she attacked Scott, and he cut her hand half
and
off.
It's like,
and she ate it off.
Yeah, it's the redo of the part from Within the Woods. But it's like way more. She's like way more of her hand connected when she fucking like rips that off with her mouth.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of like if you see a like dog hair or something on your coat, pulling it off would be the Within the Woods version. And this is like some of that like excess barbecue sauce got onto your wrist, and it's so delicious that you need to just like suck it off for like a few minutes.
You need to eat your entire arm.
Yeah, because that barbecue sauce is so good. She just, that scene is way too long. It's like a maybe full minute of her gnawing and like ripping her hand apart.
Yeah.
It's so bad. Ugh. Yeah. Just absolutely horrific.
And then with Ash with Linda, there comes a moment where he's like, he should dismember her body, and he can't bring himself to do it. So he just takes her out full.
Yes.
To go bury her.
Yeah. He brings her out to the work shed to dismember her. Fun fact, that scene, Bruce Campbell is holding a real chainsaw up to her chest, and you can see her like quivering from fear with her eyes closed, like breathing heavy because she has a chainsaw held next to her, that like a real chainsaw. Yeah. Just something. Just cut something back. To think about.
That scene from, of like the car shopping stopping short in the earlier movie.
Yeah.
The breath of relief in the actor's face.
Like, yeah, whew. it's literally that. It's gonna get worse, so buckle in. But yeah. Anyways, he can't do it, and he just buries her instead. We get that cool shot of like the camera looking up at him while he's burying her, and he's like covering the lens with dirt, and that's kind of what he uses as a transition to him being completely done, and going back into the cabin after he's done dealing with her. I just really like a lot of the shots in this movie. I haven't really been calling them out really, but like that's one that I really, really like.
Mm-hmm.
There's also one that was a little bit earlier with like the demon looking in through the windows. I just think is good angles used, a lot of Dutch angles as well used in this movie, which is great. Yeah, just good shit.
Giant windows in this cabin. That one in the in the bedroom that Shelley gets attacked from. That window is so fucking big.
It's so big. And like,
and this was great for making a movie in this window. That must have been fucking terrible in the cold.
Yeah, totally. Totally. After burying her, she comes back alive, of course, and grabs his leg. The part still scares the shit out of me because I have like a PTSD moment of when I watched this a long time ago on some mushrooms and it like ruined my brain.
That must be when she fucks up his leg. Grabbing it.
You're right. That is totally when it happens. But like that jump scare, even though I know it's coming, still scared the shit out of me in a way that it shouldn't. A normal person.
Yeah. And we also get more with that necklace that Ash gives Linda earlier in the movie that we didn't talk about this time. The magnifying glass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the catalyst for him not dismembering her.
Yeah.
That she's wearing the necklace that he gave her earlier. That's a weird magnifying glass.
Yeah.
It catches his eye.
Because Raimi bought it with the intention of like, oh, I'll shoot in the morning to burn the Necronomicon. Ash will focus the light through this magnifying glass.
Yeah, it's such a dumb idea, but fuck, I love it, and I wish that it was in there. I really do. And you're right, we said it before, that thing looks like a cheap piece of shit. Like, it is a terrible necklace.
Yeah, I learned this from a Bruce Campbell AMA, and he was just saying, like, and Sam picked the fucking worst piece of jewelry I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Yeah. It is so bad. It's so bad. So, anyway, she revives and attacks him. He decapitates her with a shovel and kind of drags his way back into the cabin to get away. And inside, he figures out, and we see that Cheryl has escaped. The cellar hatch is like basically on its hinges, completely opened.
And he cuts off Linda's head. We get that great shot of like the shovel going and knocking her head off.
Maybe it didn't come through. I said that he decapitates her with the shovel.
Yeah.
At that part.
And you get the good bit of clearly like being buried in the ground. Their head just sticking out.
Yeah.
Classic
so
bit.
There's apparently a thing where originally to balance out the tree rape scene, there was going to be a part where Linda's decapitated corpse rapes Ash because now it's even.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so weird to me.
Not even.
That's just literally like doubling down on bad ideas.
Yeah.
So
I'm very glad
that doesn't happen. Apparently that was a thing. It's like, see, now it's even. Even rape. Like, yeah, great.
Even Steven.
And I don't know if that's like a confirmed just like thing or if that's something like one of them said as a joke necessarily, but it seems like it was close to being a reality, mm-hmm. which is kind of fucked up. Anyway, back in the cabin, it just goes to shit. Everything is bad now. Cheryl is out and kind of like hiding from him or whatever. He ends up getting choked by her through the doorway that he closes. And so, oh, yeah. Okay, fun fact. He goes into the cellar to get the shotgun, right? Mm-hmm. And this is like an important thing. The shotgun is a real shotgun.
Uh-huh.
Think you know where I'm going with this. That shotgun was actually shot with real live ammunition for the shots where he shoots it.
Oh, man. I hadn't thought about
like
that.
Like at the window uh-huh. or whatever. And the part that I'm talking about where he shoots her in the head through the doorway or whatever,
uh-huh.
that is a dummy filled with blood that they shot. Mm-hmm. And if you'll notice, the camera is at a low angle because they were afraid of it getting hit with like anything
mm-hmm.
from the gunshot. Yeah. So it was a different time in movie making.
Just fucking do it.
It was a real gun. That was a real gun apparently bought from Kmart. And then after that was given to his brother, to Bruce Campbell's brother, Don, who still has it. So yeah, fun fact. They shot real shotgun shots for this part, which is insane to me. So stupid.
Man.
Anyway, hey, we get this like,
I love the thing of the two arms bursting through the door. And then just like,
yeah.
And you just see those holes in the door for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. I think that might have been like a Ted one too, because it's just like makeuped arms with wearing gloves to look like zombie hands. Or whatever. Apparently, Bruce Campbell got hurt there too. So that's like his real blood dripping down his forehead from being grabbed.
Fucking great.
Yeah. But, yeah, she tries choking him. He shoots her through the hole there. Scott comes back at this point in the exact same, like, shot and way that he does in Within the Woods, which is a cool callback that we get now as people that have watched both of those in succession and can recognize it. So he just shoots up and attacks Ash, gets the book close to the fire pit that's going. And, oh, right. I forgot. Ash, like, gouges out Scott's eyes this part.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, I forgot about that part because I was thinking to myself, Sam Raimi hates hands. There's a few times now where, like, we haven't really called them to action, but specifically, even like right before this part, mm-hmm. when he's being attacked and he closes the hand or the door on the hand and then like breaks it off or something like that. Sam Raimi hates hands. And I was thinking he also kind of does stuff with eyes sometimes. He did in Within the Woods mm-hmm. with like the eye hanging. I forgot that there's an eye scene here as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gross. And then he pulls like a tree branch that was stuck in Scott's stomach from the trees attacking him, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And like all just like keg of blood on corks. And there's just blood pouring out for like a minute.
Yeah. That like just like that effect of pulling it out. It's just like clearly like the sack that's been plugged with this wood. Oh, man.
It's so gross. Yeah. 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 Anyways, this all culminates into like them all attack Scott and Cheryl, deadites versions, attacking Ash while he's on the ground trying to get the Necronomicon so that he can throw it in the fire, because he noticed that as it started to singe a little bit, they started to like die. smoke, yeah, whatever you want to call it, like it was having an effect on them. Mm-hmm. So of course he sees the necklace there, which is in the shape of a skull, because of course it is, and grabs it, uses it to try to get the Necronomicon and throws it in the fire. And then we get what you say is one of the best things about this movie.
Yeah.
The weird stop motion.
You get the stop motion of these fucking demons people like dissolving.
Yeah.
And just like cutting, like,
it's so gross. Oh,
like thing after thing of like that, like all molding over and just like corn pouring out of an arm or whatever.
Creamed corn. Yep. Yeah.
But then, and then the best part is like the fucking demon hands that burst out of the bodies is like the last thing. That shit rules.
Yeah. That shit is so fucking metal. And that is not necessarily a staple of Raimi stuff, but he does that multiple times in other stuff, like in the future. Mm-hmm. And it's always kick ass. Yeah. Every time. It's so fucking good.
That's such, yeah, a good way of like the last gasp of a demon possessing a person is just like the demon's arms, just like literally physically punching through.
We get like the idea maybe that like that body was their portal into like this world or something.
Yeah.
And it's their last ditch effort of trying to get any version of themselves out, yeah, to do anything.
They're just like the arms stick through and they're just grabbing at anything.
Yeah.
Hungry, yeah, arms.
Yeah.
Hungry hands.
I
think
this is, so I watched this movie like when I was arguably too young. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like a kid, but I was very young. I think this is where my love of body horror started. It's shit like that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's so good. It is so fucking good.
God, I could not have handled this movie when I was younger. I just couldn't have done, yeah, it, I don't think.
That's fair. Stuff like this was easy for me to handle. It was stuff, I mean, we can talk about them at some point later down in the future. Scream 1 was actually the movie that like scared me and gave me nightmares and like broke my brain. Because it was too real.
Sure. You know?
It was kids just murdering each other. Like, it was too real and too tangible. Yeah. This is like far enough into, I've never been a believer in like necessarily the afterlife and ghosts and demons and stuff. So it's just kind of fun, like horror porn to me. So like, yeah, this stuff never bothered me. But this part is awesome, except the decomposing stuff is disgusting. It looks like moldy bread or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, it's so gross.
I don't know. It's also weird to me. The movie I totally could handle when I was younger was Alien, or whatever. Like, but just because that's branded sci-fi, it's not horror. It's fine, and it didn't have a problem. I don't know. Like the chestburster scene of that is so fucked up too. I don't know why.
Yeah,
why
it's
I was that didn't really bother me, but
sure. I mean, yeah,
that's like that's like the exception I look at looking back to like. Oh, I could have. It's more in your head than like necessarily what is that on screen. Like so much of my fear of my like complete aversion to horror stuff was my dad just not liking it. And I will mostly watch action movies and stuff with him. And just like, like working myself up, like making myself scared over time, active imagination kind of thing.
Totally. Yep. Imagination does it for sure. Well, with everything a-okay now, dawn is here. We survived the night, and
hell yeah.
Ash stumbles outside into the daylight as we get our last scene. Ash walks away from the cabin, and then we get some more demon movement where demon goes through the forest, goes through the cabin, and attacks him. And that's kind of when it cuts to black.
That last shot is now, so fucking good.
Do you want to know how you achieve it?
Yes.
You take your camera.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You mount it to a tripod.
Okay.
You mount the tripod to a motorcycle.
Hell yeah.
And then you And then you drive through the forest, through the cabin, and no joke, into Bruce Campbell and break a bunch of his ribs.
Oh, fuck. God damn it.
Literally happened. Because they wanted that, like, oomph of the demon hitting him, too.
Uh-huh.
So they literally just drove into him, and that's when it cuts to black.
Man.
That's fucked.
That's super fucked. All right. Okay. Yeah. All we need you to do is put your home up for collateral and get hit by a motorcycle.
He obviously believed in this thing.
Yeah.
And man, I wish I had anyone in my life that was a Bruce Campbell. I don't think my parents have believed in me the amount that Bruce Campbell believed in Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Anyways, that's The Evil Dead. I found this little tidbit interesting too. Apparently the original cut of the movie was 117 minutes long, and it was cut down to what they call a marketable 85 minutes.
Hmm.
The original cut focused more on the buildup of the terror and more of the tragedy of Ash losing his friends and his failure in saving them.
Oh.
Huh. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a different movie feel with knowing that.
Totally.
I think it's that was maybe a bit too artsy for what this is. Because it's not an introspective character thing. I understand why you can lose the Ash thing. Of the tragedy of Ash losing his friends.
Yeah.
That's fine to me. They have enough in there that you still feel it. Specifically with Linda. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. They did an okay job with it. And also importantly, the reception to this movie has been super interesting. So I looked more into this because in our original recording, I just kind of made a comment of, yeah, I think somewhere in Germany or something, it was banned. It's a little weirder than that. So this was released both in movie theaters and film or whatever as normal. And then it was banned right after.
Mm-hmm.
It gained popularity and kind of like black market copywriting and pirating and people like selling it to each other or whatever. And then a heavily edited cut was released in 1992, which people like had access to or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the uncut version had its first legal release in 2001, only to be seized by authorities less than a year after that. So they legally released it, and then they're like, no, it's still too bad. Took it off shelves again.
Wild.
In less than a year. And it wasn't until 2016 when they finally got a court to overturn it, and apparently some other movies. I didn't look up what the other movies were. That you can buy that now in Germany. Only 6 years ago.
Man.
Insane. So, yeah. It wasn't just, I think it was banned in Germany or some shit. It was, like, heavily disputed in Germany for a while. That tree rape scene is apparently banned still in a bunch of countries, just randomly. I didn't bother grabbing the list of names.
Because that makes sense.
It was initially released as X-rated in the USA and then turned to NC-17 in 1994.
Sure.
And it was one of the first films to be labeled as video nasty in the UK and was banned because of it. Do you know what video nasty is?
I've heard the phrase before, yeah.
Okay, I hadn't. So I will, I had to read up on it. So I'll talk about it for like people listening who probably don't know because it's a weird thing. Video nasty is a term that was popularized by an association called the National Viewers and Listeners Association, or NVALA, in the UK. And it was made as a way to bypass. So, okay, the Brits have a thing called the BBFC, which is the British Board of Film Classification. It's kind of their like ESRB or MPAA or whatever. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like a precursor to that, where it's just like, if you're deemed as just completely just having no class, obscene, I think they had a thing called the Obscene Publications Act in 1959. They just wouldn't even bother bringing you to the British board because you're disgusting and you have no place here. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the first movies labeled as video nasty, which is hilarious. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Spilled in the legend of the movie.
Yeah. Some other ones that that you might assume as soon as I say them, you'll be like, yeah, okay. These ones, I don't know. I didn't look directly into like what all these movies have gone into, because there were ways you could censor movies so that they wouldn't be considered video nasty or anything like that, and like,
sure,
be looked at properly. But and there's also, things have just changed in years. People have been more open to stuff. Mm-hmm. Some movies that you may have heard of before that have gone through stuff like this and like needed bans and cuts to even be looked at by other stuff: Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Hostel, Saw series. I'm trying to look. Cannibal Holocaust is just completely prosecuted. Like, it's,
I mean, that makes sense.
Yep. I Spit on Your Grave, which is a movie I've been wanting to talk to forever, but I don't think many people will actually watch that and talk about it with me, but that's okay. Maybe in the future, who knows? Last House on the Left. Basically, if your movie deals with sexual assault in any way, mm-hmm, it's probably automatically going to,
yeah,
be prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking under their non-prosecuted films. I just want to see if there's any here that like I could say and then people listening would know. I know some of these. I mean, Evil Dead was re-released uncut in 2001, so that's one of them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that makes sense because we're talking about it. I don't know half of these, so I don't think many other people would. And then video nasties in general. Dawn of the Dead is on here.
Okay.
Again, I'm just looking for ones that have like big names. Scanners. That makes sense. I bet there's a bunch of Cronenberg on here, right? Night of the Living Dead. But that would, like, that's super old, so that makes sense. Friday the 13th, yeah. 1 and 2. Yeah. Looking at these now, a lot of these are here because of the time, I think, that they were made. A lot of late 80s, early 90s stuff on here.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a bunch more. Apparently, A Clockwork Orange.
That makes sense.
Had something to do with here, but that film was re-released uncut at some point in the 2000s. The end of the story of all this stuff is that apparently in the 2000s, a lot of this stuff was released uncut.
Uh-huh.
Because,
yeah,
people don't care as much anymore. Mm-hmm. Not as Puritan. Anyways, I just thought it was funny that this movie was one of the first.
Yeah.
To do that, mm-hmm, or to be part of that.
Getting that shit.
Let me give you some alternate titles too, because these are just fun.
Sure.
In Germany, obviously, I'm not going to say like the titles in their language
because
I can't pronounce them, most of them.
Uh-huh.
In Germany, it's called Dance of the Devils,
ooh,
which is great. Mexico is The Awakening of the Devil, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In Hungary, it's The Spirit of the Woods, but it was never actually officially released, which is kind of the interesting thing.
Huh.
That's the name it was given, mm-hmm, by like pirates and black market,
uh-huh,
sellers. So that's hilarious, but that's how they know it there, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Now, the most interesting one in Italy, it's just called La Casa or The House. Huh. The reason this is weird is because Evil Dead 2 is called The House 2. And then what they call The House 3, which you would think is like Army of Darkness, is like a completely different movie by a different person.
Hell yeah.
And then The House 4 is a completely different movie by another different person.
Yeah, that's classic Italian B-movie shit.
Yeah, so they can... The Evil Dead to them is literally a B-movie called The House, which has nothing to do with the other two movies in its namesake or whatever.
That's so good.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, that's pretty much all I grabbed, so I hope some of that information was interesting, if nothing else. I found some of it just hilarious to reread and just be like... Yeah. Holy shit, that final shot, that is not worth it.
No.
Think of your best friend.
I know.
Could you imagine running him over with a motorcycle?
God.
Like, I could, but, like, only if we were getting something out of it. Because they weren't sure yet. Like, they were trying to make it still.
And you could make the movie without hitting him with the motorcycle.
Yeah, you could stop that motorcycle after breaking through the door.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Man. Part we didn't... I'm just thinking about stuff we didn't talk about. When Ash goes into the basement, and first he sees the pipe, the water pipe that's just leaking everywhere, and then later he goes back there, and it's just... There's like... It's like ready to burst, and it's wrapped up in like paper or like paper towels or whatever. And it's just blood leaking from it.
Yeah. And it just breaks.
Yeah. It just pours all over him. And you get that shot of the projector turning on the basement and the blood dripping on the camera there as he's standing in front of the screen.
Yeah, a nod to one of their friends whose name I didn't write down, but I did read about him saying that to keep him interested, you got to keep blood running or whatever.
Got to keep the blood flowing.
They literally do that. In there. Yep. That whole scene is disturbing.
Yeah.
That whole scene makes me feel really sick. It's especially weird in like this day and age where we're thinking about airborne pathogens and bloodborne pathogens a lot more because of like COVID and pandemics. Just like the idea of being in a giant thing of blood or having that much blood on you is disgusting in a way that is only visceral if you've been through a thing where you can't even like hug a family member without maybe being sick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We also kind of didn't talk in general about how within the woods really set up a lot of things in this movie.
Yes.
There's like a lot of just shot for shot. I was going to save it for the end anyways to kind of bring it together.
Sure.
But like one of the things you brought up the first time is the like porch swing just smacking against the window or the side of the cabin or whatever.
Yeah.
Is a direct shot taken. The hand one is another one you brought up where he drops the keys on the ground and then like a hand reaches from inside the doorway to grab them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a jump scare moment or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just some really cool. It's nice seeing that. What, not build up. What's the word I'm looking for? That evolution of like those ideas into like a full fledged product, and kind of a fun nod to us super fans like that have just watched the other one now and can like notice those Easter eggs essentially.
Totally. It's like fun watching someone who's like someone's girl who really thinks about the framing of particular shots and has ones that like he likes to reuse as like a signature or whatever. Like, and then looking through his oeuvre and you pick up on them.
Totally.
Like, it's very fun.
Totally. I just remembered another fun fact that like isn't important, so I didn't write it down, but it popped in my head, so I'll say it.
Sure.
those wood planks at the beginning with that, like, are breaking or whatever, falling mm-hmm. from the bridge, are props from it, its murder, just like the foam 2x4s uh-huh. or something.
Yeah.
That's just fun. A fun little callback as well. Yeah.
Got to use your leftover props.
Totally.
And then burn them
apparently
for warmth.
They burned all of them. Yeah. Apparently they burned them. Also, another thing I didn't write down, but what the hell? At the end of shooting, apparently they went out, bought 100 shotgun shells, and just shot up and like broke everything that they had for props that were left or whatever. And I don't know why.
It's just getting out
just
your
to let off steam.
Yeah. Uh huh.
So, yeah.
You gotta fucking show the movie who's boss.
Yes.
You don't indeed. Own me. Even though you own my house, kind of.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, but that's really all I have to say about this movie for the second time. Actually, with more this time. If it's any consolation, listener, I feel this is actually the better version of the first one that we did. So you get more content anyways. I think this is about 20 minutes longer. Yeah. So there's that.
Got those facts.
Got those facts. Yeah. I don't know if that's like, I don't know, weirdly try-hardy or something, because it's less conversational then and more like, did you know? Or whatever, but it's such an interesting development that I felt some of it was interesting enough to talk about here.
Yeah, no, like this is definitely the kind of movie where you want to know that stuff, because it's like on the tip of your tongue how they fucking did shit. Like you can feel them. You can feel the like the kids behind the shots like making the shit. Like
yeah,
the production is not so. So good as to mask it, and that's part of what makes it such a fun experience to watch.
Totally, yeah,
because that's so much of like what I love about horror movies is like the fun of like the people made this shit happen. They like were like, how can we make this fucked up thing or whatever?
Totally
captured on a screen.
And that's kind of why I mean, yes, first of all. And that's also why I like following horror, like, artists. Is too far, I guess. Like, horror filmmakers, mm-hmm. because at some point, it's no longer the stuff we're talking about that's fun here of, like, how did the scrappy young startup do it? It's this horror guy has so many things in his toolbox. How is he going to put this puzzle together? The mm-hmm. horror puzzle this time.
Yeah.
And like, it's weird because we'll be talking about it more specific. The one is Drag Me to Hell. Yeah. The Drag Me to Hell episode. We're going to be talking a lot about Sam Raimi has his toolbox at that point. What tools is he using
to
put this together for us?
Uh-huh. And also
is kind of like,
for someone like Raimi, who's done this a bunch of times, like, how is he keeping it interesting for himself? Like, how is he going to feel like he's topping himself and stuff?
Another person I think of specifically when we talk about stuff like this is James Wan. Is like another one that's just like, he obviously created a bunch of things and like got some tools along the way. But the reason I love Malignant was because it's him busting out the toolbox.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And doing his version.
Oh, that movie's so funny. Something.
That's one of the best movies of the last year. Just straight up. It's so good.
It's so much fun.
Yeah, it's so good. That is Raimi-esque in its fun and how much it's having fun doing the thing.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. But... Yeah.
So the other thing I just want to mention, just because you made me think of it, like how much shooting this was a nightmare. The movie. So when I did me and Ben did the big Beowulf thing, one of those movies, like the 2006 Beowulf and Grendel, starred Jared Butler. There's a documentary about that making of that movie and what a fucking nightmare it was. And because that's a movie that fucking nobody cares about, like, watching that movie be a nightmare to make was like, oh, fucking making a movie is a scam. These producers totally are fucked. Like, they were like making that movie because they started production like $1 million in debt somehow, and they just had to fucking make the movie. They had to keep going.
Oh, weird. It's like the exact opposite trajectory of this, where they weren't in debt and then were making a movie and like had to figure out how the fuck that works. And it worked out for one and not the other. Go figure.
There's like there's like a moment in that movie where they like put the whole crew on this fucking Viking boat that was leaking, and they in fucking freezing water, and they didn't fucking tell anyone it was sinking when they were in it, and they were like shooting with like everyone had to take off their life preservers. Like, it was fucked.
Man, yeah.
And to come out the side of that movie with a movie like literally nobody cares about.
So when did that come out?
Like 2006, 2005.
Okay, so I was going to say, at least this happened in a time where like OSHA wasn't a thing. Like, people didn't care about safety, really. Just like, as long as you didn't die, then who cares if you shoot a shotgun at a on a film set? Like the one you're talking about,
there's
guidelines and stuff they should not have been doing. Man, I mean, they shouldn't have been doing them here, to be fair. They could have actually killed somebody they're like close with.
But like, they're 20-year-old kids doing their passion thing. Like, I get it.
Totally. Yeah. I've arguably done dumber for less. So, like, yeah, I get it. That all being said, I'm so glad we finally got this on wax, as it were. Mm-hmm. I said it on the other one, and I'll say it here. This is one of the original, like, movies that popped in my mind when I was like, oh, a horror podcast named Survive the Night. Like, it's one of the quintessential, like, well, this series, I should say, not specifically this movie, but Dead by Dawn was like originally going to be the tagline of the podcast. But I, like, nobody uses taglines anymore. So that never came to pass. But like, this series is the quintessential thing in my horror love. And to revisit them is such a treat. But most importantly, just to be able to like see them with a different lens and kind of like talk about them, and like maybe people listen and maybe they don't or whatever. It's just super cool way to revisit it.
Yeah.
But yeah. So after all that is said and done, we're going to be watching a movie that I've never seen. So it's not a revisit for the next iteration and next episode. A movie so critically panned that it almost not only ruined Sam Raimi's career, but also the career of the Coen brothers in its wake. So a movie's so bad that this movie was originally supposed to end with the idea that Ash died or succumbed to the demon. They had to bring Ash and the crew back for Evil Dead 2 because Stephen King somehow got wrapped up in all this, gave his praise to Evil Dead, and that was the only way they could maybe get back in the good graces of people.
That's so funny.
So next time we will be talking about a movie called Crime Wave, written and directed, or directed by Sam Raimi, written by Sam Raimi and the Coen brothers. Yeah, should be interesting. You haven't seen this one either.
I have not. Sam Raimi and the Coen brothers. How could it go wrong?
Yeah, this is a weird one too, where I might watch it twice. I'm going to watch it one time at least, obviously, for the episode. But I also have the commentary track Bruce Campbell did. Ooh. And I think that might be too interesting to not.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But either way, that'll be next week for you, listener, I guess. And we'll see you then. Thanks for joining us.
Join us.